हरिः
सहनावावतु सहनभुनक्तु सहवीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Okay, so this, 16,000 coward damsels are a display of 16 varieties of internal potencies. So it is said that Lord Krishna is just like the moon, and the internal potency damsels are like the stars around the moon. Because when you're doing the technical pancharatric worship, then when you establish the Lord's seat, there's sun, moon, and fire. Because these are all the elements of light, right? Illumination. So they all have their different parts. So moon has 16 kalas. So when you're establishing the seat, then there's Anantu is holding it up, then you're the seat, then all these potencies, and that. So that's a standard thing that all these potencies are in the seat. So the 16 different aspects of the moon. So then that would be represented by the 16,000 gopis or 16,000 queens, right? Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. Like that. Get what it is. Sun, I think, has 12. I think moon, fire has 10. Like this. They have their different parts. So it's a standard pancharatric element. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's purport to verse 21 describes that all these attachments of the Lord are manifestations of His internal potency. This verse explains that though the Lord is not attracted to the actions of the Maya Shakti, He is attached to the actions of the Chit Shakti. By sweetness of four elements, glances, words, actions, and form. The Lord gave pleasure to the devotees on earth, imam lokam, and on swarga, amum, and especially with the yadus. But among the yadus He enjoyed specially with the women. This shows greater and greater attachment, showing affection through a festival of conjugal actions for these women at suitable opportunities during the night He enjoyed. This is because these queens were actually composed of His chit shakti arising from His sarup. Right? Because the sarup shakti, his own sarup, but then His sarup shakti, then the chit is the internal potency. So that's the aspect that's there. So then the conjugal is going to include all the aspects of rasa. See, if he is rasa, then that means he is all the different kinds of rasa. All the different aspects of rasa, so all the subtleties, everything about that. Now, in that, we see is that in the five rasas, in the hierarchy, each higher one includes the last one. So conjugal includes all five. So that means if you're going to deal with a rasa that deals with the most complete aspects of Krishna as rasa, it's going to be conjugal. So then naturally, then whatever's the pastime, the conjugal aspect of it is going to be the most full. Therefore, Krishna and the gopis in Vrindavan, Krishna and the queens at Dwarka, Vishnu and Lakshmi in Vaikuntha, it's always going to be that aspect. Now, in Vaikuntha, there's no entrance for the general devotees because it's only servitorship. But they serve Lakshmi because she is the main servant. But these other aspects, then, you know, it's understood is there, but they have no connection with it. But in Dwarka, then you have entrance where living entities can take part in this. And then, again, even more so in Braj. Right? Does this make sense?
Yes.
Yeah. So it's just natural, because one may say, why that rasa? Because it has all the subtleties of everything. And therefore, it's the most full and complete to interact with all the different aspects of Krishna. So then his Surup Shakti then has everything complementary to every aspect of rasa of his Surup. That's why only Radharani can actually please Krishna fully. Because there isn't any aspect of his nature or his personality that's left out. Right? While someone's an expansion of Radharani, means they're only manifesting a certain portion of that mood. So therefore, there are parts of that mood that are unattended. Right? Now, if you have Radharani's complete mood, and you have this particular mood that emphasizes one area or another, then it's the complete mood plus something. Does that make sense? I have a complete meal and then I add a few extra preparations. It makes it better. But if I just have the few extra preparations, yeah, then it's not necessarily going to be better. Does that make sense? Yeah, it loses something.
Snack.
Yeah, let's say I have, yeah, this is snack. Like you have the meal and you have some achar, right? Now if I get rid of the meal and you just have the achar, now that might be a bit rough, you know? I mean, some people would like it, but, you know, I don't think you could do it every day. But, you know, okay, well, you know, one time, you know, and then you could talk about, yeah, we only had achar for lunch, yeah. You know. Yeah.
So technically Krishna only
answers
those ones who are under the chit.
Yes. That's because Maya Shakti is taken care of by Maya. And so then as his transformation as Shiva, he's taking care of her. And then all the living entities are functioning. So they're functioning under the mode. So there's nothing, means what is there for him? They neither understand him as the supreme in majesty, and neither do they care about him as a person in sweetness. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, what's to interact with? Right. But in the chit potency, that means then they're under the devotional service. So that's something to interact with. Does that make sense? Yeah. Adhyaya Prakashika. The third chapter describes the pastimes of Krishna in Mathura and Dwarka, such as the killing of Kamsa. The destruction of the Yadu dynasty is also described in brief. Now, everything's in brief because so many things are already known, so you just have to give the essential points. Yes?
Is there a reason that we're going through, it seems like it's kind of a condensed version of the 10th canto that we're doing right now?
Well, you have a problem with 10th canto?
No, I'm good.
You're good? Okay,
yeah.
So that everybody else is good, so something good then you like to hear about.
Yes, that's good.
But if you see, is here, Uddhava talks about it. Bhishma talks about it. It means everybody talks about it. Right? Because these are the Lord's pastimes. So that's what he does throughout his life. So that's what's the most nice, most attractive.
But in terms of our progression as readers from first canto towards the tenth, does it have a specific function?
Why? It means as soon as you get to this point and you hear these, then you get distracted and next thing you're sticking chilies up your nose and rolling on the ground in ecstasy. And
I hope not.
Okay.
I sincerely hope not. No, I don't think that's going to happen.
Okay. But I mean, it means you read now, it didn't happen.
I
it wasn't
know.
That as soon as you read, then immediately you start looking around for chilies or stuff.
No.
Okay. So then it's cool. It's just these are the Lord's pastimes. But his 10th canto is going to get into very, very fine detail. This is just the overview. But for those who are absorbed in rasa, that's enough. They can take from there. You know, like if we tell the story of, you know, Mary had a little lamb, do we have to discuss, you know, that the lamb is a baby, you know, sheep, you know, and then there's these sheep, they're kind of, you know, fat and woolly, and they're good in the wintertime, and, you know, people keep them because then they can take them. Do we have to discuss all that? No, I just have to say that Mary had a little lamb, right? Does that make sense?
I'm not sure I get that one.
You don't get that.
How's that related?
You don't have to give all the detail.
Okay. Okay, yeah, okay, so
because someone already knows.
Okay, yeah.
But at the same time, because it's so wonderful, when you do give and get into all the detail, it's not a problem either. So it's not like the material. But what we're saying is that there's subtleties. You can just say, refer to something, a word, an incident, a situation, and then that means everything else. You know, it's like that. You know, it's like you're about to do something and then someone else says, this isn't going to work out like last week, is it?
No,
you know, no. So yeah, you don't have to give the whole explanation, right? You know, yeah. So that condensed form, it's there, it's, you know, one can absorb oneself. As we'll see here is that Uddhava, you know, is very absorbed, so.
Pretty absorbed.
Yeah. Yes, because that's the only thing that can be interesting. Because if one is interacting in illusion, what's going to be the interest? Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay. Uddhava continues to narrate Krishna's pastimes, now describing the Lord's deeds after he left Vrindavan. After leaving Vrindavan, Krishna marries thousands of queens, beginning with Rukmini, and by expanding himself, he simultaneously lives with all 16,108 of them in Dwarka. Uddha speaks of the going of the Yadu dynasty to Prabhakshetra, the place where, by the desire of the Lord, the Yadu dynasty members left the earth. Shloka Anusharana. Verses 1 to 23, the Lord's pastimes after he left Vrindavan. Verses 24 to 28, the departure of the Yadu dynasty from the earth. Verses 1 to 123, the Lord's pastimes after he left Vrindavan. In verses 1 to 123, Uddhava continues to narrate Krishna's pastimes, now describing the Lord's deeds after he left Vrindavan. Uddhava describes the Lord's wonderful activities outside Vrindavan, such as killing Kamsa, studying under Sandipani Muni, kidnapping his first wife Rukmini, his heroic marriage to Princess Nagnajiti, his bringing the Parijata tree from heaven to please Satyabhama. Footnote 13. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur describes this incident as follows. Krishna appeared to be an ordinary husband controlled by his wife. However, actually he desired to give a dear object out of prema to his wife who had prema. Right? So it's always about reciprocation. As you surrender to Krishna and interact with Krishna, that's how he reciprocates. So they reciprocate on that platform. They deal with him in that way as ashra. He reciprocates. That's how the whole thing functions. Right? So that's what, you know, Mataji's point is that because on the material platform, there is no actual reciprocation with Krishna as a person. Therefore, there's no interest of Krishna to being involved. Right? Only until devotional service do we actually deal with him as a person.
Yes.
Right? That's where it starts. Otherwise, before that, we're just dealing with him as material energy, or maybe as the Supreme, or as Paramatma. So, as one goes through these levels, he'll reciprocate on those platforms. But it only when devotion is there, then we're dealing with him as a person, as Bhagavan. Then that's of interest. Otherwise, these other things aren't of great interest.
Yeah.
He thus took the Parijata tree, because of which Indra went to fight him with his thunderbolt. The reason for that was that he was the plaything of his wife Suchi. According to the principle, one thinks that everyone else is similar to oneself. Atmavan manyate jagat. Indra thought that Krishna was also a plaything of Satyabhama. In his purport to the same verse, Srila Prabhupada explains that Indra forgot that the Lord is the proprietor of everything and cannot be henpecked. The Lord is fully independent, and by his will only he can have hundreds and thousands of wives like Satyabhama. He was not therefore attracted to Satyabhama because she was a beautiful wife, but he was pleased with her devotional service and thus wanted to reciprocate the unalloyed devotion of his devotee. So it's not that, like here, is that the elements, that whatever it is that is valued, you know, on the material platform, that's not his consideration when dealing with Satyabhama. There it's because of the devotion. So we can understand the devotion is very great if he's willing to, you know, upset the king of heaven by taking his parijata tree, you know, like that. So it must be her devotion is very, you know, very full, very intense. So then that's a natural reciprocation.
Well, yes. It seems like this thing with Indra, that he thinks that Krishna is also the plaything of Satyabhama, it seems like that is almost like this impersonal thing of merging into the Supreme. That if I'm everything that's going on externally is similar to what is going on internally.
That's there, but it also is that the other element is, where does it place, I mean, who gets placed as the center of the universe? Yes. So that means, if I'm the center of the universe, whatever I do, that means everything else in the universe does.
Functions like that.
Yeah. So then it's just that self-centered.
Yeah.
You know, one thinks, because as one starts to be humbled, then it's like, well, I can't do that, but God can.
Yeah.
You know? But in the beginning we think, no, what I think, that's how you get the anthropomorphic elements.
Yeah.
Is that we're like this, so therefore God's like that. Rather than, no, God's like that, therefore we're like this.
Objects speaking, of course.
Meaning the first one or the second one? Yes, of course, objectively speaking. Can't be any subjectiveness, yes. Because Prabhupada said he forgot that the Lord is the proprietor of everything. Right? Because he's henpecked by his wife, Sachi. And Sachi's, you know, the point like this is, what's the use of doing so much piety and being elevated to the position of being wife of Indra if the things that you have as the wife of Indra aren't unique? You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? Let's say you just went someplace, bought some, you know, some exclusive shop, bought some very unique, you know, one-of-a-kind sari like that, and then on, you know, a big festival day like Janmashtami, with great confidence, you put it on and wear it, and when you go to the temple, every other lady there has it on. In fact, theirs had sequins and yours didn't. You know, it would be a problem, right? Yeah, so here, then she's thinking like that. He being henpecked by her, then naturally he has to reciprocate the particular affection. Yes, the rasa. And therefore, then he goes out to, you know, get his tree back. But as we can see, since Krishna is the proprietor of everything, that's not going to happen, right? The tree is going, you know, so he's going to have to learn to live with that. But it doesn't mean that his wife's not going to refer to this incident for the rest of the manvantara, you know, like that, you know. It's going to be a problem, you know. Yeah. Okay. Okay, that was, okay, 13. His killing of Narakasura and his expanding himself to marry 16,100 queens, each present simultaneously with Krishna in her own individual palace, right? Because the whole thing is if the kings, they have more than one wife, but they have to each have their own palace, their own quarters. It's not that they have to share things, you know, it's not they have to ask each other if they can borrow this from the fridge or something like that, or can I use some of your conditioner, mine ran out, right? No, everybody has their own, right? You know, it's completely separate. You don't have to see the other person like that. You could go all day and not see another queen, right? That's what it has to be. But these kings, there's only one of them. That's all. You know? So then they have to work out how he spends his time like that. One king had, I think I mentioned this. Yeah, about how he had the roof, his apartments, and then to go into each apartment, you didn't have to go through the main entrance, you went down through the roof. So that way, no queen could tell which apartment he was in. Like that. You know? So, but, you know, so that's clever. But Krishna's more clever. He just expands and he's with each queen every day. So every day he comes back to her house, stays the whole night, and in the morning leaves and goes to, you know, attend court. So now that, you don't get better than that. So that's the... Uddhava tells of how the Lord enjoyed his life with many queens of Dwarka. 1-9. Srila Jiva Goswami helps us to understand the phenomena in Krishna Sandarbha Anucheda 106. That a single form of the Lord can be manifest in many places simultaneously is described in Srimad Bhagavatam 10.69.2. It is astounding that the Lord, Sri Krishna, who is one without a second, expanded himself in 16,000 similar forms to marry 16,000 queens in their respective homes. Srila Prabhupada at New Dwarka spoke on April 21, 1973. Bhagavatam 1829 lecture. The description is there in the Bhagavatam, that is Bhagavan. So those rascals, they cannot understand. They criticize Krishna that, quote, he was very lusty, he married 16,000 wives. Even if he's lusty, he's unlimitedly lusty because he's unlimited. Why 16,000? Right, you know, we have no problem. Right? If he would marry 16 million of wives, still it is imperfect, right? Because he's unlimited. That is Krishna. So for Krishna, there's no such thing that you can accuse Krishna as lusty, sensuous. No, he showed favor to all his devotees. There are so many devotees of Krishna. Some devotee asking Krishna to become her husband. Some devotees asking Krishna to become his friend. Some devotee asking Krishna to become her son, or his son. And some devotees asking to become his playmate. In this way, millions and trillions of devotees are there all over the universe, and Krishna has to satisfy them all. He does not require any help from the devotees. But as the devotees want, so these 16,000 devotees wanted Krishna as their husband. Krishna agreed. And that is, just like common man, but as God, he expanded himself into 16,000 forms. So you have to understand what is the common element, what is the unique element. Right? So it's common that, you know, somebody wants to marry, they get married. That's common, but it's originally there in the Supreme Lord. Right? But the unique thing is that there's 16,000 queens, he expands to be with each one of them. That's unique. Right. So instead of looking at it that he's interested in sense gratification because that's what people are interested in here, right? Yes. But he's looking at it as that it's about reciprocation of the devotees. That's the main thing. So the reciprocation of the devotees, what it is that they're interested in, that's how the Lord reciprocates. That's what makes it special. Right? Yes. Right, so even if one thinks it's okay, but still there's the element of common man, but he's expanded himself 16,000 times. So that makes, you'd have to admit that there's something unique going on here. Right, something special. Uddhava also describes how Krishna kills Kalyavana. The king of Magadha, kills Kalyavana. The king of Magadha, Jarasandha, Salva, Sambara, Dvidvida, Bana, Mura, Balvala, Dantavakra, and other demons. Then he speaks of the battle of Kurukshetra, by which Krishna fulfilled his desire to relieve the earth from the overburdening of military forces. After the end of the battle of Kurukshetra, the Lord said, The abatement of the earth's great burden, 18 akshahinis, has now been effected with the help of Drona, Bhishma, Arjuna, and Bhima. But what is this? There is still the great strength of the Yadu dynasty, born of myself, which may be a more unbearable burden. 10 to 14. Srila Prabhupada explains the meaning behind Krishna's use of the word burden in his purport to this verse. There are two kinds of burdens. There is the burden of the beast and the burden of love. The burden of the beast is unbearable, but the burden of love is the source of pleasure. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur describes the burden of love very practically. He says that the burden of the husband on the young wife, the burden of the child on the lap of the mother, and the burden of wealth on the businessman, although actually burdens from the viewpoint of heaviness, are sources of pleasure. And in the absence of such burdensome objects, one may feel the burden of separation, which is heavier to bear than the actual burden of love. When Lord Krishna referred to the burden of the Yadu dynasty on the earth, he referred to something different than the burden of the beast. The large numbers of family members born of Lord Krishna counted to some millions and were certainly a great increase in the population of the earth. But because all of them were expansions of the Lord himself by his transcendental plenary expansions, they were a source of great pleasure for the earth. When the Lord referred to them in connection with the burden on the earth, he had in mind their imminent disappearance from the earth. All the members of the family of the Lord were incarnations of different demigods, and they were to disappear from the surface of the earth along with the Lord. When he referred to the unbearable heaviness on the earth in connection with the Yadu dynasty, he was referring to the burden of the separation. Srila Jiva Goswami confirms this inference.
Right, but the point is in the conversation, then it just goes as a natural logical consequence. You're removing the burdens of the earth, so then this one also has to be removed. Though this one's going to create separation. Right? The other ones, it's good riddance. Right? But here, it'll be separation.
The Lord continued, when the Yadavas quarrel amongst themselves, influenced by intoxication, with their eyes red like copper because of drinking, then only will they disappear. Otherwise, it will not be possible. On my disappearance, this incident will take place. 15. Srila Jiva Goswami in his Krishna Sundarbha, Anucheda 127, explains the subject of Krishna's will regarding his family members, expressed in verse 15. In this verse, Lord Krishna is considering, anyone who fights with the members of the Yadu dynasty will be unable to kill them. And even if the Yadus fight amongst themselves, they will still be unable to kill each other. In this way, it will not be possible to effect the disappearance of the Yadu dynasty from this earth. What method of causing the Yadus to disappear exists, except for my own wish? The Lord further thought, only if I wish it will the Yadus leave this earth planet. This decision of the Lord is confirmed by the use of the word sma, which means certainly. Because the pastime is finished, so they need to go back either to their respective positions in the universe or continue with them in the pastime, right? Go back to Godhead, whatever is their position, right? The eternal associates will then go to the next, you know, place of pastimes. The demigods, they'll go back to their positions. The devotees then will go to the spiritual world like this. Yes. Burden of the beast. So you're wondering if this is like a Kipling kind of thingy here or something? No. Burden of the beast means like you take a lot of stuff and you pack it on the back of a donkey. That's called burden of the beast. Right? Is that okay? Yeah. Yes.
What does it mean that the Yadus were plenary expansions?
The Yadus were plenary expansions. Means all his sons. What do you mean by what do you mean? You know what I'm saying? What's the actual question? Means, in other, you understand what's happening here?
something's been said, there's a doubt. Now you're asking a question on that doubt, but haven't expressed what the doubt is. Just like when Vasudeva, you have Sankarshan Prajumna Nani Ruda, they're expansions of Vasudeva. And like that, it can go on unlimitedly expanding, like we see in Vaikuntha. So like that, then all the sons are like that. They may be, they may not be. The point is whether they're Vishnu Tattva or whether they're empowered. Just like when we were discussing before about Cupid. Then what aspect is the eternal form of the Lord? The other is an empowered jiva. So technically, which one's functioning where, it doesn't really matter, because the same expression of the potency is going to be the same. So therefore we see in the one is the first one is the expansion of the Lord, the second one is the empowered jiva. Right? Does that make sense? So these are generally how the things are working. But at the same time, as within the past time, it appears that this is the plenary portion. So you're having both at once, just like the Lord, when He comes, then all the incarnations are with Him. But at the same time, when the past time leaves, the demigod Cupid will still be left. But he's just an empowered living entity. Does this make sense? So you have these things going on simultaneously. Like when at the end of this chapter, we'll get into this about the Lord, that He leaves a form. How does that work? Does that make sense? Yeah. Is that okay? But I mean, there are those who are demigods, there are those who are eternal associates. There are those who are sadhakas who are coming up and taking part in the pastime. So you have all of these. Right? All of them are happening at once. That means it will come up, be brought up later, that the Yadus who went to Prabhakshetra, they were not the eternal associates. Right? So though they will be the demigods or the ones who through sadhana have pleased the Lord and come to be part of the pastime. Right? So then they leave and go to either heavenly planets, go back to Godhead like that. The eternal associates stayed in Dwarka. Does that make sense? Right? Because the eternal associates don't need to go on pilgrimage to purify themselves. But everybody else, it's good for them. The Lord continued, when the Yadavas quarrel... Oh, we just read that. Where is, oh, this one. Yeah, the small.
Eternal associates and ETC does not put them in the same category?
One's the Sanskrit, one's the English. Okay.
Okay. Okay. This decision of the Lord is confirmed by the use of the word sma, which means certainly. Another interpretation of this verse is that in truth there is no method that will succeed in the Vada, killing of the Yadu dynasty, for their disappearance from this earth is not at all like the death of the conditioned souls. The Yadavas returned to the spiritual world without changing their bodies, and therefore they did not at all die. It's just they're not manifest. So it's a whole different kind of situation. You have many, many things going on at once. Right? Yes.
How did the wives of these Chatriyas who were killing each other, they disappear? How do they disappear? Yeah, it is mentioned that the Chatriyas were fighting, and not what happened with the Russians.
You could say technically, as far as facts go, it's a valid question, right? But when we come to discuss the disappearance of women and children, it's generally not a topic of that
people like to discuss. You know what I'm saying? So it's arranged, because the thing is this, what happened, how did the Nityasiddhas go? Because they all stayed in Dwarka. So, you know, means it will all happen like that.
And Dwarka seems at one point, the whole island is...
Yeah, so that's another way. So, I mean, there's plenty of... plenty of ways to go.
Lots of variety.
You know what I'm saying? Because that's, you see, the point here is not about the facts of them disappearing. The point is that the Yadus being the associates of the Lord and expansions of the Lord, there's no question of anybody being able to defeat them. Right? Therefore, then the only way that they can disappear is by Krishna's will. Otherwise, there's no power within the universe to get rid of them. Because they're real, right? The material energy is illusory. Does that make sense? Yeah. So this is the point being discussed. So it's by Krishna's will that they now are able to... leave, because the pastime's over, there's nothing else to do, because they're there to interact with the Lord. So then now they can all go back to Godhead. So this arrangement is made here. Does that make sense? So, you know, that's a... Does that make sense? Yeah. Another interpretation of this verse is that, in truth, there is no method that will succeed in the Vada killing of the Yadu dynasty. Okay. In his purport to verse 15, Srila Prabhupada speaks of the synergistic fulfillment of a devotee's individuality. The pure devotees also enjoy such pastimes of the Lord because they want to see Him happy. Devotees of the Lord never assert independent individuality. On the contrary, they utilize their individuality in pursuit of the desires of the Lord. And this cooperation of the devotees with the Lord makes a perfect scene of the Lord's pastimes. Right? So the devotees, they're only acting, even though they're independent, they use all their independence to simply be involved in the Lord's pastime. So therefore, when the Lord goes, then they go along with Him. That, you understand, this is the whole element that Bhagavatam brings out, is this aspect of rasa. Right? So that's why we want to be careful that we're not dealing with just the facts. See, Puranas are classified as aparavidya, means material knowledge that's connected to the, you know, that can be connected to the Lord. Right, it's in the mode of goodness. It has that piety that you can connect it. The Bhagavatam as a Purana is classified in paravidya, transcendental knowledge, right? Being the essence or the natural commentary on the essence of the Vedas, the Vedanta Sutra. Right, so it's in a different category altogether. So even though it's giving facts, it's not about the facts. The facts are simply describing the situations in that in which the actual aspects of the pastime or the perspectives of relationship in rasa are explained. Does that make sense? Yeah. Then Uddhava tells Vidura how Lord Shri Krishna established Maharaj Yudhishthira on the throne of the world in order to show the ideal of administration on the path of piety. Krishna protected the embryo of Puru's descendant by his own internal potency while he was still in his mother's womb, 16-17. Srila Prabhupada, in his purport to verse 17, gives a more detailed explanation how Krishna protected the future king. The embryonic body of... Next question. No? Yeah. the embryonic body of Parikshit, which was in formation after uterus pregnancy by Abhimanyu, the great hero, was burnt by the Brahmastra of Ashvatthama. But a second body was given by the Lord within the womb, and thus the descendant of Puru was saved. This incident, right, because one is then, because he sent it, so the Brahman made a determination. Krishna lets that affect itself so that he's not disturbing the determination of a Brahman. But at the same time is, since it's not a very important activity, and he's been approached by Uttara, for protection, and Parikshit is a great devotee, therefore Krishna then gives him a new body. So even though he tried to destroy that body, which it was, he gave a new one, you know, which most likely was better than the old one. You know, that's the standard. Right? Yeah. Yes. In this case, not exactly, because the credit we see here is still given to Uttara and Abhimanyu. It's just because the Lord is awarding anyway. So you can say ultimately on that platform of being as Paramatma, he's the father of all living entities. But in the position of Bhagavan, then everybody has their relationship. You know, it's about rasa, it's about the religion. Does that make sense? Yeah. Does that make sense? So we're discussing how the different devotees are on these different platforms of Brahman, Bhagavan, and Paramatma realizations. But our interest is in Bhagavan. These other aspects are there, and they're useful for elevating oneself, but one has to know where to apply it. Right? Because otherwise, if you apply it in the wrong place, then you'll get rasa bhas. Like that. The incident is direct proof that the body and the living entity, the spiritual spark, are different. The particular living entity who is selected to be the descendant of Maharaj Puru, or the Pandavas, was not an ordinary living entity. By the superior will of the Lord, he was destined to be the successor to Maharaj Yudhishthira. Therefore, when Ashwatthama destroyed the embryo of Maharaj Parikshit, the Lord, by his own internal potency, entered into the womb of Uttara by his plenary portion, just to give audience to the would-be Maharaj Parikshit, who was in great danger. By his appearance within the womb, the Lord encouraged the child and gave him complete protection in a new body by his omnipotency. By his power of omnipresence, he was present both inside and outside of Uttara and other members of the Pandu family. Because she's there offering prayers and everything, and Krishna is there and discussing, but at the same time he expands and he's in the womb as the Paramatma, or his plenary portion, whatever was the particular form, and taking care, and then Parikshit within the womb can see him, right? And therefore he's spending his life looking for where is this person. Uddhava continues, the Supreme Lord induced the son of Dharma to perform 3 horse sacrifices, and Maharaj Yudhishthira, constantly following Krishna, the personality of Godhead, protected and enjoyed the earth, assisted by his younger brothers. Simultaneously, the personality of Godhead enjoyed life in the city of Dwarka, strictly in conformity with the Vedic customs of society. Right, so, the whole idea is, if he's the supreme enjoyer, then there must be a level of supreme enjoyment. And so that platform of supreme enjoyment, that's what's documented as the Vedic literatures, right? So, but for us, because we are not in the position of the Lord, so falsely taking the position of the Lord, then we may be pleased or may not be pleased to follow those rules to enjoy. But we always see the members of the Vedic culture, everything's going nicely. The demons follow the same culture for their sense enjoyment. Right? So it documents that. But it's not about sense enjoyment. So the Dharma, Artha, Karma, Moksha elements are simply for the point for the Lord of rasa. Right? They're the position on which rasa between individuals can be tasted to the highest degree.
right? And the greatest degree of variety and everything else. So there must be a consistency. Otherwise, we're thinking about, oh, I'm tired, so then let's sleep in. But then by sleeping in, then it throws off so many other things in the day that don't go properly. Right? So that's not balanced. So by getting up at the proper time, then that's there, and then, you work it out. Then you go to sleep at the proper time, you do everything. Does that make sense? So that's the whole thing, is that the Lord takes care of these things. And how He lives His life is what Scriptures recommend. Right? Because the point is one, it's the only lifestyle that's actually viable. With Krishna as the Lord and us as the servant. But if we want to be God, wouldn't we do the same thing He does? Right?
Because He is.
Yeah. It's just like, you see the guy there with the sledgehammer banging something, and he's doing it so well, you think, wow, that looks easy. And so what's the next thing? What does the guy have with the sledgehammer do? Yeah. No, then he says, here, okay, you try.
Yeah.
And then you figure out, it doesn't work so good. So that's the whole thing. Krishna is following all these things so nicely. And he's enjoying himself. Everything's going so smoothly. But everybody else, when they follow it, they have a tendency to be, burdened by these, and not the burden of love. Right? Because we have an idea that I'll enjoy in this way, when actually it's not. Is that... Yes.
But if Krishna is enjoying following this lifestyle, we try to follow this lifestyle for the whole teacher, then something is wrong with us.
Yes.
It's like with the hunger.
Yes. Something's not good with us. But we may, generally we take it that it's not about us. It's all about us, but anything wrong is not about us. There's something wrong with the hammer. Somehow or another, when he gave it, the atmospheric pressure made it heavier or something. The axis of the earth changed, and therefore then, So that's the whole thing, is that conform with the Vedic customs of society, because then everything will be there. You won't gain one and lose on another side. Does that make sense? Like that. That's the difficulty that comes up, is that we're dealing in one area, it works very nicely there, but then after that we lose because in some other area it doesn't, because we're not following. So Krishna gives it, then there's a consistency of how everybody acts, how everyone interacts, how you reciprocate. So then that's the basis for rasa. Otherwise these other things, you lose on the principle of rasa. They have to learn. But it's not a difficulty, because in the liberated state, there's no conditioning to get in the way. But you still have to learn. Oh, then it may be a bit of a trouble because of our the position of our conditioning and our attachment to it. Right? But once you come where one is become perfect, and then one's in the association of the Nitya Siddhas, then it's just a matter of learning. Does that make sense? It's just a matter of learning. That makes sense.
He was situated in detachment and knowledge, as enunciated by the Shankya system of philosophy. Srila Prabhupada, in his purport to verse 19, elaborates on the character of the Lord in conformity with the Vedic customs of society. While Maharaj Yudhishthira was the emperor of the earth, Lord Krishna was the king of Dwarka and was known as Dwarkadish. Like other subordinate kings, he was under the regime of Maharaj Yudhishthira. Although Lord Sri Krishna is the supreme emperor of the entire creation. Right? So these are the things. Even though he's the supreme control of the whole creation,
still he acts as a subordinate king to Maharaj Yudhishthira, right? Because that's more fun. Right? He means as Ramachandra, he's emperor of the world. But here as Krishna, then he's, you know, they're subservient kings too, where the devotee is the emperor. While he was on the earth, he never violated the principles of the Vedic injunctions because they are the guide for human life. Regulated human life according to the Vedic principles, which are based on the system of self-knowledge called Shankya philosophy, is the real way of enjoyment of the necessities of life. Without such knowledge, detachment, and custom, the so-called human civilization is no more than an animal society of eat, drink, be merry, and enjoy.
Didn't he violate the principles of Vedic injunctions?
Didn't he violate?
Yes.
Such as?
Kidnapping Rukmini.
Kidnapping Rukmini? That's pretty straightforward. That's generally what Kshatriyas do. That's why it's called the Rakshasa marriage.
Yeah.
Rakshasas, if they want to get married, there's a girl they like, they just go in and kidnap her. That's expected. You know, it means you'd be a wuss if you went and asked, you know, the father if you could marry his daughter. It's kind of like, we're Rakshasas, you know, we don't do that, you know, get out of here. You know, it's like that.
Well, what about the Rasa?
You know, be a Rakshasa, kidnap her, you know.
But what about the Rasa dance?
About the Rasa dance. Dancing with other men's wives. But are they actually other men's wives?
No, but...
Yeah, so you have to put all that together.
So
because the point is the parakeya. See, it's like, if you look at it, it's Krishna and his internal potency. They're non-different. But to enjoy rasa, you have to bring out the element of difference. So it's just a matter of whether you're bringing out the oneness or the difference. So we're getting upset. Why are we getting upset that he's dancing with so many gopis?
Because someone may, with our wife or something like that.
Yes, so we're worried about,
yeah,
you know. So it comes back to us. Our moral sentiments are upset because of our own, you know, gain or loss. It's not that it's a problem, you know, that Supreme Lord does whatever he wants. It's his. All it is it's a pastime that they are somebody else's wives.
It seems like this is moralism. You never violated the principles of, but like we're saying, he can do whatever he wants. Why would we say?
No, but the point is yes, he does whatever he wants. What he does, whatever he wants that he does, right? Means in other words, like this: you have mathematical systems of what is good. Right? You could take, you know, it's just like this. You could stand on your feet.
Yes.
You could also stand on your knees, on your elbows, on your head, on your nose, on your chin. You know, on the front part of your head, back part of your head. You know, you could curl up in a little ball. You could do so many things, but which one works good? Okay, so that's what's mentioned in Shastra. So whatever is good, that's what Krishna does. That's what's documented in Shastra. So he is already doing whatever he wants.
Yes.
We're the ones that have the idea that if I function outside of Scripture, I will enjoy more. But you don't.
Where is this idea coming from?
Motive ignorance. Like that. Because motive ignorance means this opposite. It means we think that by doing something else, I'll be more happy.
I'll be free.
Yeah, but what? Free from what? You know, the guy goes out and, you know, drinks so much. Is he free from... You know, how you say, a hangover? You know? Is he free from, you know, he can freely drink and do what he likes and go out and drive his car. Is he free from getting a ticket for drunk driving? No. You know, so that's the whole thing. The reactions are there, but for the Lord there's no reaction because it's his creation. He's functioning. He's not under the laws of nature. We are. So in other words, God always follows those rules.
The laws of nature are under him.
Yes. You know what I'm saying? You can get 16,108 girls and expand into 16,108 forms and dance with them all night and for a night of Brahma. Then okay, go for it. But it's not possible. Therefore, that's his independence.
So that you have to know is where you're following in the footsteps and what's imitation. So that's, okay, you're saying, okay, we're dancing with the gopis, but then the next morning are you taking the cows out and herding the cows? No. People just choose what they like. That's the point, is that they just take what part they like and then overemphasize it.
Yeah. So when here it's said that he doesn't violate the principles, that's for us to understand so that we can understand that we should also not.
It means two things. One is he's setting example, and two, means he can't violate because the rules are established by him.
Exactly.
What he does are the rules. So he's saying, as a subordinate king, so the elements of Varnashram that he's following, that's the rules, that's how it works. That makes sense?
Yes.
Okay, Shankya philosophy, okay. The Vedic injunctions, because they are a guide for human life, regulated human life according to the Vedic principles, which are based on the system of knowledge called Shankya philosophy, is the real way of enjoyment of the necessities of life, because you have to know where they're coming from, what they do, and everything like that. Without such knowledge, detachment, and custom, the so-called human civilization is no more than the animal society of eat, drink, and be merry and enjoy. That's why one wants to be very careful about trying to establish a social system that's not based on knowledge, detachment, and the Vedic custom. But if you want to base it on something else, it's already based on the mode of ignorance. And so you can't call that glorious. You can't say it's the same. You can't say it doesn't matter. It's the same. Oh, that's just Indian. No, it's not. It's Vedic. One doesn't understand what Vedic is. That's sad. Right? The point is no, these Vedic things are there. You want to understand them, you can, but because Krishna is the rules of the Veda, that means just like Krishna is ununderstandable through one's intelligence, the Vedic rules and customs are also not understandable by the intelligence. So if one purely uses this modern subjective method, objective method, well, yeah, whatever they want to call it, then you will not understand the Vedic society. You can't. Because it mentions here knowledge, detachment, and custom. Because the custom is what the great personalities with that knowledge and detachment, how they practiced it. That's what we're applying.
Yes.
And we have to be able to, as discussed before, just be able to discern between the principle and the detail. You can't claim that, oh, the detail is here, we can't do that. Right, Kshatriyas wore a sword, so we're not wearing swords, so we can't be Kshatriyas. No, you don't do that kind of. That's not good. Right, so Shankya means the ability to analyze, and then based on that, then you're able to apply how everything functions. Right, so it's just like the mind, according to Shankya, is manifest from the mode of goodness. Therefore, for the mind to be peaceful, it has to be situated in goodness. That means you have to be performing activities that are recommended by Shastra in the mode of goodness for the mind to be peaceful. And if you don't do that, there's no way you can be. You can't satisfy the mind with passion or ignorance. People are trying. People have philosophies coming out their ears. But it doesn't mean that it works. That's the whole thing. Is that it has to follow these rules, otherwise it won't function. The Lord was acting freely as He willed, yet by His practical example He taught not to lead a life which goes against the principles of detachment and knowledge. Attainment of knowledge and detachment, as very elaborately discussed in Shankya philosophy, is the real perfection of life. Right? So therefore we'll see as very soon we'll come across the Shankya philosophy. Right? It's being brought up now. Then the natural thing is, okay, so what is this Shankya philosophy? And then the conversation will be there. So continue. He was there in his transcendental body, the residence of the goddess of fortune, with his usual gentle and sweetly smiling face, his nectarine words and his flawless character. In his purport, Srila Prabhupada resolves the seeming contradiction between verses 20 and 21. In the previous verse, it is described that Lord Krishna, being situated in the truths of Shankya philosophy, is detached from all kinds of matter. In the present verse, it is described that he is the residence of the goddess of fortune. These two things are not at all contradictory. Lord Krishna is detached from the variegatedness of the inferior nature, but he is in the eternal blissful enjoyment of spiritual nature, or his internal potency. So just, he has no connection between the opulence or variety of the material, but he's fully involved in the opulence of the spiritual. The Lord enjoyed his pastimes both in this world and in other worlds, higher planets, specifically in the association of the Yadu dynasty. At leisure hours offered by night, he enjoyed the friendship of conjugal love with women. The Lord was thus engaged in household life for many, many years. But at last, his detachment from ephemeral sex life was fully manifested. Every living entity is controlled by a supernatural force, and thus his sense enjoyment is also under the control of the supernatural force. No one, therefore, can put his faith in Lord Krishna's transcendental sense activities but one who has become a devotee of the Lord by rendering devotional service. Yes. Means that supernatural force is that one is controlled by the material energy, but that's controlled by the Supreme Lord. So every living entity is under this, so one has to follow. One can't act separately than this. Okay. Right, so there, because you're dealing with pastimes that do have a for the concept of time, a beginning and an end, therefore then all the activities it goes through have these aspects. But in the spiritual world, wherever this pastime is happening, then it can go on eternally, so there's no problem of adjusting. Right? But within the material world, then you have this concept of acting within time. So then you'll have the moving through household life, becoming detached from household life and all that. But in the spiritual world, you don't have to do that. So, yeah, so both aspects go on. So it's only by rendering devotional service that you can understand, because being under the control of the material energy is controlled by the Lord, then one will not be able to understand the Lord's pastimes, which are beyond the control of the material energy. That makes sense?
Yes.
Yes.
About something else.
Oh, okay.
Can we say that we dominate the material energy by quality and the material energy dominates us by quantity? Does that make sense?
What do you mean by dominating by quality?
When it says that we're dominated by material energy, it's kind of because we're also manipulating with that. It doesn't, because we're conscious, then we can do stuff with material energy, right?
Here. Draw some lines.
Good point.
Yeah. So you can only deal with the material energy in the way that it allows you to deal. And according to your previous actions, you're given opportunities for certain options of dealing, taking advantage of the facilities of the material energy. But which ones are available to you, you're not deciding. You can decide within what's there, but you still have to use it according to the nature of the material energy. Or you have your pencil or pen there. Can you draw lines without taking the cap off?
No.
Can you use the back of the pencil even though you do take the cap off?
No.
Yes.
I don't like this thing.
You understand? Means so you have to exactly deal with that pen according to how the material energy dictates that you have to.
You know, even the tip, you know, it's got that the slanted thing. If you use it the opposite way, you won't get a nice wide line. You get, you understand?
So it just seems like we're in
the... Yes, it seems like it. That's the problem.
Very.
Yes. So we're not in control. But just as we're in that illusion that we're in control here, and that enhances interaction with other individuals. So that same principle is there, originates in the spiritual world under Yoga Maya. Then it's not about the tattvas functioning. It's about the relationships. So just like here, it's about relationships. But the actual relationship's not soul to soul, it's conditioning to conditioning. So it's not real. But in the spiritual world, it's soul to soul and soul to supreme soul. So that aspect then works.
Yes. But it still seems to me that in some sense, we are superior, seeing as the internal potency is considered superior to the external potency because it's conscious.
Right. So what is this rock going to do all day?
Nothing.
Okay. And what you have opportunities to do something.
Yes.
That's the difference.
Yes.
But superior doesn't mean that you're in control.
I accept that.
Okay.
Yes.
He has free will that if he wants to draw a line on his book, then he has to pick up the thing, take off the cap, and use it appropriately, you know. Yes, and he can use either one he wants. What you could also, if you know, just for fun, put that pen in this hand and this pen in that hand, and then use it across. It makes it more interesting. Yeah. So.
That would be silly.
But it's an option.
It's an option.
Hey, come on.
I consider it. Okay.
That makes sense? Yes. Going out to a party all night when you have to go to work the next day is also silly. It's an option, but it's silly. I couldn't quite hear. I heard Muslim devotees. most of the devotees. Okay. Most.
The movement and to glorify Lord Krishna.
Yes.
One day more and more, but at the same time there is a lot of opposition. And seems like material nature is not like helping them, you know, to do, like, for instance, the temple, there's some problems to deal with. When somebody goes to preach somewhere, there's a lot of also problems. How to understand the since material nature is controlled by the Lord, things are not going very smoothly. Most of the time, it's very difficult.
If you go in a toilet, does it smell?
Yeah.
Why? Because it's a toilet. So you come in the material world, there are problems. Because it's the material world.
What was the question?
What's the question?
The interesting answer.
I see. I couldn't read the interesting. So he's... The discussion was about that devotees are basically, you know, the general devotees want to, you know, preach and expand the movement and all that, but there's so many obstacles, so why isn't the material energy cooperating? Because material energy is what it is. Right? Now, if everything went perfect here, we'd be comfortable to stay here. Things aren't comfortable, we think about leaving. Right? So we're not supposed to be here. We're supposed to be in the spiritual world. Therefore, the material world is designed that you won't get too comfortable. Does that make sense?
Right. We hear that this desire of the Lord to have a magnificent temple, for instance.
Yes.
That the preaching would go on in every town and village.
Right.
But at the same time, we see that it's, it's quite challenging, very difficult.
It's a challenge, but okay. The hero stepped out of the building onto the sidewalk, and there were all these, you know, very big, muscular guys with tattoos and beanies on and varieties of weapons in their hand. And he yawned, and they all fell over dead. And he went back inside and had a cappuccino. And it was good. Okay, you want to hear more of this hero's exploits? No. Why? It's too easy, right? Rasa is in the effort. Does that make sense? Rasa is in the effort. Otherwise, then it's just mystic. It just happens. I want it happens. But then that's mystic yoga. No, you put in the endeavor, it works. Arjuna just sat there in his tent, and you know, all the great generals of the opposing army just came into his tent and just died as they walked in or something. You know, did he have to go out and make an effort? Right? Bhagavatam doesn't discuss so much the element of the effort. It indicates. It's the other shastras that describe the effort, right? Manusmriti and Artha Shastra and Niti, that's describing what a kshatriya has to do. So Yudhishthira was doing all of that, but we only focus on how he was doing that in connection with the Lord. But the effort is all there. You know what I'm saying? So the point is it's the effort that gives taste. You know what I'm saying? You invite people over to dinner, you went out and personally selected the best microwave dinners to serve at the meal. You know, you personally put them in the oven, you know, and pushed however many seconds it was you're supposed to leave them there. In this way, you know, you hosted a grand dinner for all those who are important to you. Does that make sense? Yeah, so it's the effort that is appreciated. That's the whole thing. So it's just natural, that's how it works. Right? Just as spiritual has variety, material has variety. It's just not necessarily the variety we want. No one therefore can put his faith in Lord Krishna's transcendental sense activities, but one who has become a devotee of the Lord by rendering devotional service. Because our whole point is sense gratification. We're not going to have that faith about Krishna's sense gratification unless we're a devotee. Then we understand it's not about the senses, it's about the exchange of rasa between the Lord and the devotees. And then that's done through the senses. But for us, it's just about the senses. We're not necessarily so worried about rasa. Is that make sense? Yeah. Srila Prabhupada comments.
Even though the Lord is never attached to any kind of material sex life, as a universal teacher, he remained a householder for many, many years, just to teach others how one should live in householder life. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains that the word samajayata means fully exhibited. In all his activities while present on the earth, the Lord exhibited detachment. This was fully displayed when he wanted to teach by example that one should not remain attached to household life for all the days of one's life. One should naturally develop detachment as a matter of course. The Lord's detachment from household life does not indicate detachment from his eternal associates, the transcendental coward damsels, but the Lord desired to end his so-called attachment to the three modes of material nature. He can never be detached from the service of his transcendental associates like Rukmini and other goddesses of fortune, as described in the Brahma Samhita, 529. Lakshmi Sahasra Satasam Brahma Sevyamanam. Right, so the element of that one's functioning in a certain capacity, that's the element that is adjusted. But the Lord's relationship with the devotees is not. Right? So in the spiritual world, you don't have to make these kind of adjustments. But in the material world, it's done. The lifestyle in the spiritual world has lived like it, as if it was here, though it never changes. Here, it's lived like what it is here, and it changes. But there, it's lived as if it's here, but it never changes. Does that make sense? So what you're looking for is in the spiritual world. Does that make sense? So that one is qualified to work with the internal potency is how well one works with the external potency and always connects it to the Lord. Right? Does that make sense? Right. That then it works. Is that okay? Yeah, so don't worry that there's problems. That's because you're in the material world. As stated in the Bhagavad Gita, no one can understand the transcendental birth and activities of the Lord. The same fact is herein corroborated. No one but one who is enlightened by the devotional service of the Lord can understand the difference between the Lord's activities and those of others, who are controlled by the supernatural force. The sense enjoyment of all animals, men, and demigods within the purview of the material universe is controlled by the supernatural force called the Prakriti or Daivi Maya. No one is independent in obtaining sense enjoyment, and everyone in this material world is after sense enjoyment. Persons who are themselves under the control of supernatural power cannot believe that Lord Krishna is not under any control beyond himself in the matter of sense enjoyment. Is the Lord, right? Because we'll say, yes, he's God, he's this, that, but then why is he with the queens? Why is he dancing with the gopis? Why, you know, these things come up. So when it comes to the senses, that's when we start to get, you know, I say, the only term that comes to mind is bajiggity. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? But the whole point is we get upset at that point. But yes, he's God creating everything. Yeah, great, fine. You know, yeah. But then, you know, senses, hey, you know, wait a minute, that's my thing. Yeah. So just as he controls... He creates everything, controls everything and all that, and we can't do that. He's enjoying, we can't do that either, right? You know, so that's the thing to learn. Yeah, not that, no, I can do the enjoyment part, you know, he can just stick to the control and creation part. You know. Yes. Well, I bet the point is if it's... who's here? Yes, but the living entities are here. So the living entities that want to live their life separate from the Lord need a place. So the material energy itself, the manifestation, is not a waste. Because it's designed so that you can become God conscious.
But if we don't become God conscious, now that's a waste. Yeah, so it means the individual can take advantage of the facilities and use it to connect to Krishna, or the individual cannot and waste the time. Does that make sense? Yeah. That's the whole point. The sense enjoyment... Oh, we already did that. No one is independent in obtaining sense enjoyment. And everyone in this world is after sense enjoyment. Persons who are under the control of the supernatural power cannot believe that Lord Krishna is not under any control beyond himself in the matter of sense enjoyment. As the Lord says in Bhagavad Gita 8:55, Bhaktyamam abhijanati yavanyas chasmi tatvataha. One cannot know even a fraction of the activities of the Lord if he is not a pure devotee of the Lord. Right? So that's why it's important for us, as we have these literatures, but we have the commentaries of the acharyas. Because without that, we would never understand.
Again, like servant of the servant of the servant.
Yes. Yes, because that the way you hear from them, then you understand how the energy is working. Because the atheist always thinks that there's things controlling me, therefore there's God, someone has to control him. That's always the thing. Okay, if God created everything, who created him? That's always their snide little comment. He said, he's God, nobody controlled him. That's what makes him God. We're created, that's why he creates us. But, you know, he's not created.
He is creation.
Yeah. So that's the whole point, is that it is different. So we're not used to that. So that we always bring this out. So, but as I said, there's less complaints or doubts about him being the creator, maintainer, and destroyer. But when it comes to sense gratification, then we kind of feel, well, that's what we want. So how is it he's getting and we're not? You know?
Not fair.
Yeah, not fair. Yes. So, makes sense. Yeah. Okay. So only by devotional service can you understand. And that's by approaching those who are the pure devotees of the Lord. They can explain it, because that's why all these commentaries, all the purports. So we're hearing from great devotees, from Uddhava and Vidura, you know, who's hearing from Pirkit Maharaj and Sukadev, who's hearing, who were, you know, then is spoken by Sutta and, how do you say it? The sages of Naimisharanya, Shonaka, yes. You know, so that whole, so we're hearing from great personalities. So that's the method. Verses 24 to 28, the departure of the Yadu dynasty from the earth. Verses 24 to 28 describe the going of the Yadu dynasty to Prabhakshetra, the place where, by the desire of the Lord, they left the earth. Sri Uddhava continues, Lord Sri Krishna, taking note of many bad omens and reminding them of the sage's curse, convinced the Yadavas to abandon Dwarka and go to Prabhas, on the bank of the Saraswati, to perform Swastyadhyayana, bringing auspiciousness and other rituals for counteracting bad fortune. Because they already knew about this curse and this and that, so then, you know, then they want to naturally do something that will be favorable, be auspicious. All the descendants of the Vrishni, Bhoja, and Andaka, who were incarnations of demigods, went to Prabhas, while those who were eternal devotees of the Lord did not leave but remained in Dwarka. 24 to 25. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur renders verse 25 as follows. After several months, the Vrishnis, Bhojas, and Andakas, in forms created by the Lord's illusory energy, joyfully went to Prabhas on their chariots. Commentary. The Vrishnis eternally remain in Dwarka. They do not leave. They remain there, invisible to the eyes of the common people. Their going was an appearance created by the Lord, Deva Mohita. This phrase can also mean that the Devata portions of the Vrishnis became bewildered and went to Prabhas. So you have the eternal associates, they're naturally who's going to be expanding and as the demigods. So then you can have here the combination between the eternal associates and their expansions as the demigods. So if there's an associate who expands as a particular demigod, then you can have them both at the same. Just like Krishna, when he comes, all the incarnations are present within himself. So then that aspect that is what the form created by the Lord's illusory energy, is the aspect of the demigod, that's what's going to prabhas. And the eternal associate is staying in Dwarka, so they never leave. But now they're unseen. Because the common person thinks everybody went to prabhas.
So it means nobody stayed?
That doesn't necessarily say that. It's just mentioning this point. Yeah, it means what left is the demigod aspect of the associates. What we're meaning is that, let's say, okay, you have, the Yogpeet, right? So that's going to be the Lord and his internal potency, right? Depending upon now what kind of Yogpeet you're setting up, then you're going to have the next expansion around that. And then their expansion around that, and their expansion around that. It just gets bigger and bigger as it goes out. So in Vaikuntha, I think the standard is they go out seven or something like that, probably for the seven walls. Okay. So now, but it started as just two people. You know, and then that expands into eight, that expands out further, it gets, you know what I'm saying? So you get 33 million demigods. Those 33 million demigods had to come from somewhere. Where do all those positions and potencies come from? But the Lord's energies. So that means an associate of the Lord, they are the origin of that particular demigod or group of demigods. You know what I'm saying? So you simultaneously have that aspect and different. So in here, they're bringing out. So whether you're having demigods, mixes, or anything like that, the point is that who's going is that aspect. So even if you have an eternal associate, it'll appear that they go also to prabhas because they're going in that aspect of theirs of the demigod. You know what I'm saying? Since you're having all these things happening at once, because Dwarka is an eternal place, so the associates never leave. So the associates don't leave. Only the demigod aspects leave. So that means whether it's demigod... So, does that make sense? So, whether that means there's individual jivas there or not, or... all means all of that's possible. So, whatever's important for the particular description, that's what's brought out. So you see in one place one thing's brought out, in another place another thing's brought out. And we'll say they're contradictory, but we see is that in the Lord, that's His glory, that all these contradictory elements are reconciled. Right? That's why it's only through devotional service these things can be appreciated. Because by regular intelligence, it does not make any sense. That's the thing. And it doesn't have to. And the residents of Dwarka really don't care if it does. Right. So in other words, so we have that aspect of the demigods, they go back to their positions. But at the same time we hear about them going back to Godhead. Right? At the same time we hear that they stay and only the demigods go. You know, but at the same time is then they're staying, but they're invisible to the eyes of others because they, you know, one part went, the other part stayed. So all this is possible. It just depends which one you want to bring out at the time. Is that anything?
Uddhava continues. After arriving there, all of them took bath, and with the water of this place of pilgrimage, they offered their respects to the forefathers, demigods, and great sages, and thus satisfied them. Right? Because the point is going on going to a holy place to become purified. Then the eternal associates don't have to do that. So the eternal associates, they're not into pilgrimage. They need to be purified. Right? So that's why Prabhupada points out that Narottam Das Thakur says, you know, especially in this age, that the trouble of going on pilgrimage is greater than necessarily the benefits you gain. Because the whole time you're just trying to make arrangements. You know, you go there, the taxi doesn't show up, the train's late, you know, or the train's late so you mix your taxi, you know, because you're late, the rooms have been given to someone else, you know, the restaurant that you were planning on going to is closed. You know, everything's just, you know, one after another. So you spend the whole time trying to make arrangements, when if you just stayed back where you were, you could have just chanted and done everything very nicely. So it's pointing out it's therefore the element of the pilgrimage, the mechanics of it, that's not the important aspect. The importance is remembering the Lord. So that remembrance of the Lord, association of devotees, that's the value in the pilgrimage. But otherwise, as far as the effort, what you get in this age is not that great compared to, you know, previous ages where we see everybody goes and it works very smoothly. You know. Therefore, it's the association of devotees is what's important. Okay. They offer their respects to the forefathers, demigods, and great sages, and thus satisfied them. They gave cows to the brahmanas in royal charity. The brahmanas were not only given well-fed cows in charity, but also gold, gold coins, bedding, clothing, animal skins, seats, blankets, horses, elephants, girls, and sufficient land for maintenance. Thereafter, they offered the brahmanas highly delicious foodstuffs, first offered to the personality of Godhead, and offered their respectful obeisances by touching their heads to the ground. They live perfectly by protecting the cows and the brahmanas. 26-28. In his purport to verse Srila Prabhupada.
That's a very important verse.
Yes. Emphasizes that giving charity to Brahmins is an essential part of the Vedic culture. All these charities are meant for the brahmanas, whose lives are devoted entirely to the welfare of society, both spiritually and materially. The brahmanas were not giving their services as paid servants, but the society provided them with all necessities, right? That's the difference, that's the difference between a job, right? Shudra means he's doing it because he'll get paid. Not getting paid, not doing it. But the brahmanas are doing it because that's their, you could say their duty or service towards society. Now, the natural thing, if you have the culture, you reciprocate that, and then they're taken care of. But they're not doing it because of that. Right? Those that are, that's not considered very good. Right? So, it was arranged for some of the Brahmins who were in difficulty for marriage to be given girls. The Brahmanas therefore had no economic problems. The Kshatriya kings and rich mercantile men would provide them with all that they needed. And in exchange, the Brahmanas were completely devoted to the elevation of society. That was the way of social cooperation between the different castes. When the Brahmanas, right, so there's no advantage to making everybody the same. Right? The culture is there, but then the duties are different. Right? Because otherwise, then, we're all Brahmins. Yes, by ashram, but not in varna. But if we extend it too much by the modern social concepts, then if we're all Brahmins, that means myself, I have plenty of money, but I don't need to really give to other Brahmins because that's the business of Kshatriyas and Vaishyas, but I'm not one, so therefore I keep all my money. You understand how it works? Yeah. So it's That's why I say it's a modern social concept that's built on economics. That's the whole basis. When the Brahmana class or caste gradually became easygoing, being fed by the society, although they had no Brahminical qualifications, they degraded themselves into Brahma Bandhus, or disqualified Brahmins. And thus other members of society also gradually fell down from the social standard of progressive life. So that's why Prabhupada says, you establish Brahmins, then the whole culture can be put into place. Because it's always, oh, what should we do first? How do you establish Varnashram? You establish it by creating Brahmins. If that's there, everything else will come. Yes?
Brahmins is more like a natural quality of some individuals. How can you establish them? What's the meaning?
What's the meaning? Means that those who... Okay, let's say I have a gold ring and it's covered with mud. Okay. Yes, because the point is it's a gold ring, but what's it acting like? Mud. I clean the mud, it acts like a gold ring. So therefore, through the process of devotional service, then one becomes purified, then one can act in that capacity. So that means you can only establish Varnashram through the performance of devotional service. It's not a separate endeavor. You know, some say, well, we have to get some land, you know, but who's going to get that land? They don't talk about it. They just land. There should be administrators who have land, and they give it to the Vaishyas for free, and you know they can use it and that, and then they pay some tax. And it's always from that. I don't hear, you know, it's always that someone else. About who, where are they supposed to get this land? You know, it's always a matter of, you know, yes, the Vaishyas are having these. Like Nanda Baba has that area. It actually belongs to the Mathura kings, but it's given to him to utilize, and he pays his tax. It stays with him. Right? Yes.
What if we have a society that doesn't actually appreciate Dominical qualities?
Then you don't have a whole lot of hope, socially. And devotionally it'll be weak, but socially it'll be a write-off.
Okay.
But devotionally, as long as there's basic cooperation and appreciation, it'll function. So it means one's only functioning on some aspects of ashram dharma. Because varna dharma is not functioning. Right? So, but devotional service being independent is not controlled by these things. It's a nicer environment. Like if I have a nice clean pujari room with all paraphernalia clean, nice flowers, everything all there, it's easy to do puja. I walk in to do my service, the whole place is dirty, every pot is unclean, the flowers haven't even been ordered, let alone somewhere, you know, or they're sitting out in the hot sun, you know, something, then it makes it more difficult. So that's the whole idea is that, but you can still do devotional service there. You go wash the pots, this, that. But that's what Prabhupada's recommended. If you want a more comfortable life, that things go more pleasantly, you follow Varnashram, because then everything's in place. It makes it easy for everyone. But if you like the rough and ready and basically doesn't work at all system that the Malechas and Yavanas have cultivated over the last 3,000 years, hey, go for it. It's there. You know? Yeah.
So we see that somewhere here and there.
Yeah. That's the whole... It's just a matter of... What do you want? It's not that Varnashram is a spiritual principle. It's just, it's the better situation. Just like if I go into a kitchen that's clean, it's easier than a kitchen that looks like a bomb hit it. It's not rocket science here. There's all things, no, but what's Varnashram? How do we get... It's rocket science to those who, you know, live under a rock. Yes. You know. Yeah, they just don't know how to live. You know, you have Dwarka, the big good city. Right? They're used to at best living in a big bad city. Most live out in the country. You know, so they don't even know city life at all. You know? Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay. Yes. No, he's worried about devotional service. Right? Establishing devotional service. To do that, then you need to be able to, expose the maximum amount of individuals to it. So that's going to happen through that Brahminical class. Because Brahmins, that's what they do, is they teach. They don't have something else to do. You know what I'm saying? Someone's there, and they're doing stuff at the temple, and then they decide they need more money, so they go out and get a job. How much are they doing at the temple? Yeah, so that's the whole thing, is that you go around to the temples here and there, and there's a handful of people in it. But the community, there may be 300 to 500 or more. Why is that? Because there's not the Brahminical aspects that happen. So it's either they're not Brahminical by nature, or there's no facility for them to be protected as Brahmins and function in that capacity. So if you have that, so therefore the Brahminical culture is there, it's valued, then that's what's going to be focused upon, as opposed to managers. Managers are very expensive. Brahmins aren't. You know what I'm saying? You have to have this big, huge machinery, then Kshatriyas are happy. You know what I'm saying? But Brahmins, they just have a little facility, they function. So it means if you really want to start, you start with that. It's foolish to start with the Kshatriya thing. So the whole point is this. But that being there, then everybody knows what the standard is, so they're all functioning at their best. Then if you bring in the Varnashram element, then they'll be able to make more of a cooperation and work more freely. So it's a facility. It's like good pots. They're a facility. You can cook without them, but it just makes it easier. You know what I'm saying? If I have a thin, stainless steel pot or aluminum pot, then what's the problem? Everything burns and sticks. Right? So either I have to use a lot of oil, or I just have to steam everything, or I have to like charcoal, one or the other, you know, something like that. I think that's how you have the thing, what's it called? I forgot the name. It's a particular name, you know, of course, when it comes to cooking, then you have to say, you know, it's the French. That having cooked something in the pan, you fried it, then the problem is half of it sticks. So that's where all the flavor is. So then you put water and boil it. And then all that comes off and gets into the sauce. So it's got a specific name doing that. You know, within the because nowadays you have pans, nothing will stick. You know, even if you don't put any oil in there, they still won't stick. So you don't have that problem that you need now to boil it to get the, you know, yeah. But before that was standard. Why? Because pots stuck. That's just the way it worked. So, as you improve the quality of what you have, then it just makes it easier to perform that devotional service. But it's still service, even if you're working with inferior materials. But to say that, no, we're Mlechas and Yavanas, we've always used, you know, inferior materials. We're attached to our inferior materials. Our inferior materials are just as good as superior materials to use in the Lord's service. You know, what is all this nonsense? It's not about, you know, what are all these externals? You know, why are we interested in all these Vedic externals? You know, we're only interested in Western externals. You know? That's then what's being talked about. It just is easier. If you can't relate to it, don't bother. But then understand is you don't bring tribal society to the forefront. Because if tribal society was working so good, there would be no devotees. You know what I'm saying? There would be no devotees. Because everything would be fabulous. So that's the whole thing. You can say but it's so tough, it's Kali Yuga. You go to the same country where all the quote-unquote Westerners are having so much difficulty, and you bring in a bunch of Asians.
Give them 6 months, they're doing pretty good. Give them 2 years, you can start to see it. Give 4 years, they're doing really well. But give that same Westerners 40 years, and they'll still look the same as they were before. They're still living in a shoebox and eating a handful of, you know, gravel for breakfast. You know what I'm saying? Just the way it is. So it's not that, it's not that. Now, what is the difference? Why do I use the term Asians? Because they're following something a little, what's just left of the Vedic culture. Right? So that's what Prabhupada said. Dead or alive, an elephant's worth, you know, a lakh of rupees. Right? Because if it's alive, it does so many things. If it, you know, and the tusks are there and that. But if it's dead, all its bones are ivory. So it's still worth a lakh. So just the structure of it is still valuable, even if you don't have it filled out. So it's the structure that you basically have, the varnas and ashrams and basic rules. It's still more valuable than anything that the modern has to offer. And one can complain all one wants. Where's the success? Where is the, what is the Western system? Go ahead, type it into Google, see what you get. One will say one thing, someone will say the opposite. What's accepted as a law that works great in one state, in another state, they don't even accept it because they don't like it at all, because it doesn't work for them. So it's there is no modern solution. They just don't have. So that's why it's recommended that there's a consistency in the Vedic. But you have to know what it is. And you have to be qualified. So the problem is you can't use the American Maverick system where you just come in because you want and then suddenly it all happens, you know. The guy who, you know, can't even open a, you know, use a can opener without cutting himself is suddenly there able to wipe out battalions and all that with his, you know, I mean, you know, great, it works good in Hollywood. Everybody, why does it work in Hollywood? Because that's what everybody wants. But in real life, it doesn't work. The guy gets married, it doesn't work. Why not? Because he isn't that maverick. He doesn't know what to do. So the whole thing is this training is required. So the Vedic system is how to train. Then everything works. But we have this idea, as Mlechas and Yavanas, that if there's any control, you can't be happy. At the same time as we talk about Western society, which means control. We just want to be controlled by passion and ignorance rather than controlled by goodness. Sad, but true. Yeah. So that's what Prabhupada is saying. If the Brahmins are qualified, then it works. So it's not a matter, oh, they're not qualified, so throw it out. If you throw, there is no other system. You know? Greek society didn't, you don't hear of it developing more and becoming more fabulous after they killed Socrates. You don't hear of it getting better. Right? You know, attention kind of shifts over to the Roman society. You know, that's the whole thing. If you shift away from the leader, then it moves away from them. You know, the Greeks and the, you know, then started this whole thing of this rationalization, and well, this is as good as that, and brought the attention from the Brahmins and Kshatriyas down to Vaishyas and Shudras. And then how great was the Egyptian and the Greek culture? They waned, right? Because it was based on that. Then, you know, Roman culture came up, centered on Kshatriyas. So it went for a while until they got too easygoing, like here. But then the Visigoths and their friends came in and had a good time.
And here we are today.
Yes, and here we are today. Okay. Okay. So we'll end here. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Premanandini.